The movie was titled Children of a Lesser God, about two people separated by an invisible wall, you might say. Sarah is deaf and James is not. They come together at a school for the deaf and try to build a relationship by breaking through the seemingly impenetrable barrier between them. James loves music by Bach, and he tries to share the beauty of what he loves with Sarah, who cannot, alas, hear the music that we're playing right now. It's the middle movement of the Concerto in D minor for two violins by Bach. Each of the violins has a melody that can stand on its own, but when they're performed in this fugal way, they create something greater than the sum of the parts. It's as if one violin might represent Sarah and the other, James, forming a creative relationship, something beautiful and new based on what they each bring to that relationship. Yet because of the extra stresses of the wall between them, there are struggles, misunderstandings, alienation, a bitter parting. And even so, the writer of the story seems to believe there are ways for us to see each other more deeply, to develop abilities to listen to each other, even without sound, and to discover beauties within and commonalities between and among us, but also differences that we come to respect and to learn from, despite the obstacles. And so, the author might suggest that music by Bach or plays or paintings or dance might just, under the right circumstances, give us insights into ourselves and others and help us grow in understanding and compassion and friendship. They have been exploring invisible walls in many senses this fall in a photography workshop for high school students at the Social Fabric Collective in the Wyoming Valley. Social Fabric Collective is a non-profit organization that provides professional photography equipment, education, and inspiration to high school students, and each semester, SFC students engage in an intensive series of small group workshops, creative assignments, speaker seminars, field trips, and volunteer projects that challenge them to reach both inward and outward as they examine their identity and community through photography. And in the words of the mission statement, SFC hopes that by using the camera as a catalyst for discussion and discovery, for kindling delight and illuminating potential, learning not only to appreciate but to celebrate the fact that no two eyes see the world the same way, they may empower the next generation to take on tomorrow with empathy, authenticity, conviction, and courage. In their continuing partnerships with creative professionals, SFC brings individuals like Nicholas Snyder to the table. He is a senior associate at Bolin Sawinski Jackson Architecture and Planning, founded here in northeastern Pennsylvania, but now with offices all around the country, and hundreds of regional, national, and international design awards. Peter Bolin, founding principal, was awarded the AIA Gold Medal Award, the highest honor an individual American architect can receive. Jamie Smith is co-founder of the Social Fabric Collective, and he came with architect Nicholas Snyder and three of the students in the fall workshop, Jen Dushak, Molly Moran, and Chris Owen, and we all sat around the table to talk about photography, architecture, the creative process, and learning about ourselves and others. As it happens, Nicholas Snyder was wrestling with questions about his professional identity in school. Would he really make the shift from art to architecture? One of his professors gave him a challenging project that has something to say about the music we're hearing right now. Remember that the character in the movie, James, was totally frustrated because he couldn't find a way to share this music of Bach with Sarah because she was deaf? The assignment Nick was given by his professor: design something, build something that conveys this music by Bach in a visual way.
That was one of my early college assignments. So that was my first year. And that was when you're sort of transitioning to understanding whether this is really for you or not. And I was struggling early on the first semester, not because of lack of effort, but because of trying to connect to two sides of my brain. And I owe my professor a lot for that, my first year professor, because we talked before winter break, and he was connecting. He was seeing this issue that I was having. And when I came back from break, that was one of my first projects. And I had done a lot of soul searching over break, as much as you can over Christmas break. But I was really struggling with it. And so when he gave me that assignment, my analytical side kicked in for the first time. And because that's what it is, sort of the blending of understanding craft and art and observing and creative thinking with this physical analytical side and balancing that. And so when I received that, and it was a classical piece of music, it was Bach. Essentially what I did was it was two violins playing. And so I created, we'll call it a piece, an element out of wood that was sort of triangular. And so the length of one represented, and the other was longer. So one length represented the sort of secondary violin versus the primary. And then there were strings attached to that that wrapped through a piece of wood onto either side. And so I created maybe 20-some notes. And the idea behind this was that you could, for any piece of that musical piece, for any shortened piece, 24 notes, you could physically create the song and you could see it and represent it, you know, visually. You would see this sort of flow. And so you imagine any of the more recent sculptures that you see that are moving in the wind and stuff, you could, I still have this, you could see it move. And so then you could get a visual understanding of what that piece would be. And it was a representation. Someone else could have done it differently, and you could have seen that piece differently. But that was my analysis of a piece of music.
We've already suggested that the two independent violins in that Bach piece have a kind of conversation, and the result is something larger than the two themselves. And that's the case in your work, isn't it, Nick?
Something that's sort of interesting about the architecture side of things is, I mean, good architects, I mean, the people who are really trying to get at the heart of the matter, the building is just a result of a process, right? It's not that we start, and some do, but it's not that, at least at our firm, we start with this preconceived notion of what that building should be. We're really getting at the heart of who the people are and what that place is like. And so we're observers at first, right? We're listeners and we're observers. And there's this whole psychological side of this. And, you know, I've always said we're almost half psychologists or psychiatrists as we are as architects. And so we're trying to get to know people. And that's interesting because this whole invisible wall thing is all about people and preconceived notions and understandings of places and all these restrictions that we put on ourselves. And the truth is that to get to the heart of something, you have to unrestrict yourself, right? You have to step back and step out of that place, and you have to sort of remove yourself from the equation. And so that's a lot of what we do. But in the end, we're providing a physical product. And I think, you know, with HGTV and all of these programs, people think it's just you're building walls. And I'm using the word walls in this case on purpose, but you're building a physical wall. But to us, a wall or a ceiling or a roof, it's not a preconceived thing. It's a result of a conversation. It's a result of an understanding of place or where the sun falls or where the wind comes, how someone wants to experience a place emotionally, not just physically. And so to us, walls are tools, they're the result of something. And so we don't start by thinking, well, it's got to be a wood wall and it's got to have drywall on it. Well, no, it should be the result of something, an intuition or a response to a place or a person or a situation.
I think one of the biggest mistakes you can make as a photographer is to pull the camera up to your eye and then just kind of point it around aimlessly, hoping that you're going to find something. And where that relates to what Nick is saying is if you have an idea in your mind already, just pulling the camera up and getting the picture, that's the easiest part. And so what we try to do, maybe it's the same as your process of I'm thinking of a designer who might have a discovery process. Same thing is have the students really start to ask themselves, what are the things that they're seeing in their pictures? And they start with nouns and real easy, objective things. And then, do you see any patterns? And are you always shooting colorful stuff? Are you always shooting nature? Are you always shooting people? And then you try to get deeper into understanding, well, where does that come from? Why are you choosing these bright colors? Why do you like things lit in a dramatic, contrasty way? And once you start to see those patterns, then the pictures become easier and easier and easier because you understand yourself a little bit, what your preferences are. One of the things I've really become interested in is psychology, and so much of it, who you are, goes back to your environment, the influences you have as a child. It's been fascinating to learn how that then resonates with you later in life. And so I wrote a little, just thinking about the program and how that relates to helping young people figure out who they are and what they want to do. Photographing is a way for an individual to observe familiar things in a new way. But looking at photographs, that can be a catalyst for questioning what we as a group or society believe and how we understand the nature of our collective human experience. And this semester, there's been a couple of photographers that we've exposed the students to and to think about. And one is Stephen Wilkes, who's a fantastic commercial photographer. He did a book on the psychiatric ward of Ellis Island before it was renovated. So you think of issues of immigration and historical significance. But he credits a lot of his photography. He went to China when he was a teenager, thinking about 1978 or 79, right at the end of the Cultural Revolution. The second photographer who some of these students got the chance to meet in New York is Dwayne Michaels. And Dwayne started by going to Russia as a tourist in the 1950s, in the mid-1950s. That's how he got into photography. So that experience of going to a different country, and I think the context of today, the political ramifications, you know, China and Russia and what goes on and how we connect to those people from different cultures is really interesting to think about. So before the semester started, we came up with a couple of things, these kind of ideas that we wanted to, three simple concepts. We want them to take notice, take heart, and take hold. So take notice, we did a retrospective of the last 2.5 years at the Lindy Corporation in October. The take heart part is Mr. Boland's talk for the program, and the take hold part is the students are having an exhibit, and that's called The Invisible Wall. And that's that term that I heard a lot around here of people in Scranton and Wilkes-Barre or Lackawanna and Luzerne County and how they don't always connect and there's just sort of this separation. It's not physical, but we want to investigate that.
What were you thinking when you heard Jamie say, we're going to make an invisible wall?
Cuckoo, cuckoo.
Yeah, I really didn't know what it was. I was kind of thinking like of a fence, which right. It kind of does look like a fence.
Yeah, at first I was thinking, how is he going to make an invisible wall and show it to people? And then the week I came in, I saw the wall, and I'm like, okay, it's a really good way to show the diversity between the two counties and between the people.
The concept was a little confusing at first, but I think as I saw it coming together, it started to make sense.
I think one of the ways it relates to what we're trying to do is, as we move from the most kind of basic way to start talking about photography, of nouns and facts, and anybody could look at that picture and say, oh, there's a red umbrella in it. But what we're trying to do is move beyond, and when you talk about your work and articulate what your creative vision is, you want it to be, if you're going to be speaking about it, you want to be adding some context to something that anybody off the sidewalk couldn't just come in and say, oh, yeah, I see the exact same thing. So what is the idea behind? What is the purpose? What are you bringing to me? Astonish me. Show me something that, as an old 41-year-old guy that I don't know, that what do you have access to, whether it's an idea or some group of friends? And sometimes we have an assignment, like somebody's years ago, somebody's house burned down. And so we talked about, how do you photograph loss? How do you photograph something that doesn't exist? And that's a lot of what Dwayne does is, you know, he comes up with an idea first, and then he figures out how to execute those things.
And, you know, everything's intertwined, right? The world, I graduated with 10 or 12 probably close friends from architecture, and I bet 4 or 5 of them are architects. Some of them are architectural photographers. Some of them work for rendering companies. And the point is, you're design thinkers, you're critical thinkers. We're learning how to solve problems. You know, Nike back in the day reinvented themselves by hiring architects because they didn't want someone who understood sneakers, right? They wanted someone who could design and think about a solution. And in a strange way, let's say in high school, design thinking, right? That's yeah. Like, well, no, you're not being told what to do, and you're not stuck with what's being shown to you. You are thinking broader than that and then coming back to a solution. I think lots of people have those moments in different ways. I think it's a little bit why I'm drawn to what Jamie does, and I think why we've connected so well is because I think being able to be put in a position where you're getting to know people you wouldn't otherwise know, and I got that through the Scouts, right, is making you look differently at your social situation. And then you're connecting that with a creative side. Or you can use the camera as a way of separating yourself from someone. It's, you know, it's almost like a mask. But through that, you're learning about proportion. You're learning about daylight. You're learning about, well, oftentimes if you tell someone to smile, that's not the right time to push the, because there's this sort of personal side to things.
I'd be interested to hear from the students too, because I think our approach is similar in that the assignments are more, they come in and tell me what they're interested in. And the assignments are never, everybody pick a red car this week and come back with the picture that I'm telling you to take. So it's maybe a little bit more challenging, and I'd be interested to hear what they think. Is it more freeing for them to go out and find something, or is it a little bit harder if somebody's not telling you, this is exactly what I want you to do to execute it?
What do you think, Molly? Would you rather have an assignment, or was it better just to go out and learn what attracts you?
I think it was better to go out and find what I liked myself. I got the freedom to learn what I like to photograph and what I like to do.
What did you discover?
I learned I really like to do things with the political elections.
So does that mean signs like vote for me?
Or, yes.
And people too?
Yes, I really like doing people.
Did you go out on election day with your camera?
Yeah, I went to the actual Mike Pence rally, and then I went to see Joe Biden too, so I went to both.
Were the pictures different in any way?
A little different, but I think overall it's kind of the same.
Jen, what do you think about having an assignment or going out on your own?
At first, I would rather have an assignment because I didn't exactly know what type of photos Jamie wanted from us. But then, as weeks went on, I found out that doing things on our own like shows diversity between all of us, and I feel like that makes it more ways to talk about it each week.
Molly found she was drawn to the political things. Do you see something that you tend to keep going back to?
Not really. I just tend to take pictures of like anything I feel like.
How about people?
Yeah, I do a lot of people too. I do a lot of nature. I try to do different technical photos, like creative shots, and lots with different types of lighting.
Were you comfortable with not having an assignment?
Yeah, I found it easier to not have an assignment, so you can just go out and take what you're comfortable with.
Like Molly, did you find yourself drawn to certain things or broader range like Jen?
I was more drawn to nature and all that. I'd go out to state parks or parks and cities.
And get close up or landscapes or some of both?
Some of both.
I think it's important to say also a lot of this theory comes from blended learning, where there's a shift in education from assuming that the teacher knows everything and they're just going to stand at the podium and disseminate all the information and everybody else is just going to sit there and absorb from this quote-unquote expert. That's not as interesting. And so that's really what's encouraging to hear from them, that at first it might be a little bit awkward and difficult to say, well, I'm not getting the direction, but then it's, wow, I can do this, and I'm electing to do it. I'm raising my hand and saying, this is, you know, something that there's a lot of things in life where somebody tells you, you can't do this, you have to do it that way, a lot of rules, but art, photography, creativity, you can take those risks. You can mess up on a picture and you could take another one. Sometimes we mess up and then come back in the editing and say, oh, that one actually is not what I intended, but it's actually better than what I would have thought of on my own.
Molly, are you experiencing some of the surprise that Jamie just talked about?
Yeah, I think at the beginning it was more of a just putting the camera up and seeing what I could find. But now it's more I'm focused on what I'm doing.
You know, as an observer or as someone who's doing it, I think it's easier nowadays to learn from your mistakes in photography because of digital. And you can snap away, as much as that might make you cringe, like this idea that you can snap away and learn from it and see visual results quickly. But I think what we learn in school, at least as architects, is how to critique yourself and how to learn from other people's critiques, right? So we don't just sit in a room and have someone critique us and no one else is in there. All the other students are there listening to you get critiqued, and then you're also involved in critiquing their work. And so there's this other side of listening to why someone else did something, trying to put yourself in their shoes, and then listening to the critiques of that and trying to learn through that.
To your point about critiquing and being able to self-evaluate, I think, is one thing that you put a priority on. You also need to be able to separate yourself, you know, kill your darlings and get away from your work. So one of the things that these students do is every week pick out some photographs that they want to show and talk about as a group. So then you are forced to get up there and talk about your work, and then you get a sense. Are people zoning out? Are they asking you questions? Are they interested? Do the things that they see in the photographs, are the things that you want them to see resonating, or are they coming up with new and exciting things that you hadn't even noticed in your own work? And we also will do editing where they have to sometimes stand up and move over and look at somebody else's pictures and then give them some keywords. And then you go back and say, gee, I had, 1,000 photos on here, and here are the ones that I thought were really great, but I can see from the color labels that somebody else sat at this desk or the keywords that they gave me. And then you have to ask yourself, is it that this whole group just doesn't get it? Or do you have to ask yourself a really hard question and say, well, am I producing the idea? Is it resonating? Is it working? Is somebody getting my point?
Are there things you've noticed about your way of seeing, just as a person going to school or hanging out with friends and so on, that have changed since you've had this workshop in any way?
Yeah, I think the way I look at certain people have changed. I mean, as I was saying, like going to the different rallies, I see that sometimes the news and stuff makes one side to look like the bad side and the other side to look like the good side. But I think meeting with the people there, they're all just people in their own way, and they might not have the same views as us, but they're still a human being and should be treated like that.
Jen, how about you? Do you think you'll be coming away from the workshop seeing things differently?
Yeah, definitely. With my photographs now, I could see, outside of me taking photographs, I could see like what divides and unites us and think about how to put it into photos for each week.
Okay, Chris, you've been going out with a camera for 10 weeks. Has that made a difference?
Yeah, it more like how they saw people differently. I saw like what the world is around us differently, and how nature and buildings, how they are, and the way that some people would take care of specific things and others just let it go.
Jamie, you're inviting us to take a look at some of the photographs that Chris and Jen and Molly and the other students have taken during the fall workshop and see what we think.
On December 18th, Tuesday, from 6 to 8 at T.W. Shoemaker Art in Wyoming, we are having a free exhibit for this semester. The Invisible Wall is the name of that exhibit. So these students, along with their work and the others, will have their photographs up. The wall will be there. And we also have, as a fundraiser, some silent auction items that kind of tie into these ideas of nature. There's a membership to the Land Trust. Joe Corey, who's an expert fly tyer, that ties into Peter's background and interest in fly fishing and nature. And Shala Jan has donated a photograph, some of her work where people are moving through walls and in walls. So anyway, we have some items that different artists have donated to raise some money for the program that relate to these ideas of connecting with people from different backgrounds, just trying to understand their point of view.
Jamie Smith, co-founder of the Social Fabric Collective, architect Nicholas Snyder, senior associate at Bolin Sawinski Jackson Architecture and Planning, and three students in the fall SFC workshop, Jen Dushak, Molly Moran, and Chris Owen. We were talking about this year's theme, The Invisible Wall, and there will be an exhibition of the work of these young students, and that will be on Tuesday at T.W. Shoemaker Art, 312 Wyoming Avenue in Wyoming, Pennsylvania, just across the river from the greater Wilkes-Barre area. 6 to 8 p.m., an artist reception, and as Jamie said, there'll be a chance to see other items as well. The Social Fabric Collective provides 10 high school students with a 4-month intensive program to master the art and craft of photography, explore the creative process, and engage with the community. SFC provides a blended learning environment where students are challenged to make images that express their unique point of view. In each session taught by Jamie Smith, students create and share and critique each other's photographs in a collaborative group atmosphere. They are supplied with a professional camera, they work at a fully equipped computer workstation, and they develop their skills as well as techniques required to edit, process, print, and archive photographic work. And the primary focus of the whole workshop is to explore the creative process. Students will take field trips, often to New York, and they'll participate in significant community projects to broaden their horizons and their ties to their home turf, and they meet noteworthy photographers. Now, the next session, spring 2019, begins February 26th and runs to May 21st. Classes meet on Tuesdays at the Shoemaker Art Center. There are chances for a scholarship for a student who would benefit from a scholarship, and they're very much encouraging you, if you know a creative student in high school who would benefit by such an intense and creative experience, to look into the Social Fabric Collective workshops. And if you need to learn more, you should contact Jamie Smith, and you can do that online. And it's socialfabriccollective.org, socialfabriccollective.org. And if you can, stop at the Fall 2018 Photography Exhibit and Fundraiser this Tuesday, December 18th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Artists Reception, T.W. Shoemaker Art, 312 Wyoming Avenue in Wyoming, just across the river from Wilkes-Barre.